The European Middle Ages was an era of contrasts and vivid images. For some, it was the Dark Ages, a time of religious persecution, cultural degradation, and superstition. Others saw it as a period of heroic deeds and harmony. However, everyone agrees on one thing. The Middle Ages cannot be imagined without knights. The history of knighthood is extensive and controversial, which is why today we will try to understand who the knights really were and how they gained fame through the ages. In a narrow sense, knights were aristocratic warriors who underwent a ceremony of initiation. Knighting was accompanied by a series of symbolic actions, among which the most important were prayer and fasting before the initiation, dubbing the knight with a sword, and swearing a feudal oath. Interestingly, even the sons of great feudal lords had to serve as squires for some time before receiving the title of knight. In a broader sense, knights referred to the aristocratic class as a whole, or mounted warriors, regardless of their origin. From the 10th to the 12th centuries, becoming a knight without aristocratic descent was extremely difficult in most of Europe. Exceptions were made for individual, brave, commoner warriors who distinguished themselves in several battles, or for wealthy members of the Third Estate who essentially bought knighthood. Moreover, a knight's place in the social hierarchy was primarily determined by the warrior's origin and wealth. However, in rare cases, even poor knights from humble families who became famous for their exploits could aspire to high positions. For example, during the First War for Scottish Independence, the regent and de facto ruler of the Scottish state was a poor knight, William Wallace. To understand the status of knights, it is necessary to consider that in the Middle Ages, European societies were divided into three main estates. The nominal first estate was the clergy. The second estate consisted of the aristocracy, which included knights in the narrow sense of the word. However, in practice, the aristocrats were the dominant class, as about 80% of the highest ecclesiastical positions were occupied by relatives of magnates. Meanwhile, the class of warrior aristocrats was supposed to defend the other two estates and conduct secular politics. The third estate, which included peasants, bourgeoisie, craftsmen, and others, was at the bottom of the social ladder and had to provide for the needs of the representatives of the first two estates. The roots of European knighthood are often traced back to the chivalry of the so-called barbarian peoples, who conquered most of Europe at the end of antiquity. For the Germanic tribes, Huns, and Samaritans, chivalry played an important role, and often it was their cavalry charge that helped tip the balance of battle in their favor. This happened, for example, in 378 during the Battle of Adrianople, when the Gothic army completely defeated the Roman Emperor Valens' army. Barbarian kingdoms often suffered from internal strife and constant wars. However, due to the poverty of the population, the kings could no longer rely on popular militia, which had once been the backbone of armies. Maintaining their military capabilities was best achieved by the nobility. Under the rule of Charles Martel, the Franks created a system of benefices to recruit cavalry. A benefice was a landholding that a knight received only for the duration of his military service. Often, such a cavalryman was a representative of the aristocracy of the time, but ordinary freemen or even servants were also recruited. The peasants living on this land were obliged to buy weapons, a warhorse, and equipment for the knight. At that time, these funds could buy 30 cows. The mobile heavy cavalry units of the Franks proved their effectiveness in resisting Arabs, Normans, Saxons, and Lombards. The victories of the cavalry were also facilitated by technical innovations. In the 6th to 9th centuries, Europeans borrowed stirrups from Eastern nomads. This attribute of a rider allowed the cavalryman to sit more skillfully in the saddle and put almost all the weight of his body into the blow. Later, most of the benefices turned into fiefs, possessions that were passed down. Accordingly, the aristocrats and knights who owned them were called feudal lords. In the course of early medieval wars and primitive natural economies, kings lacked sufficient money and educated bureaucrats. Therefore, they increasingly delegated powers to local magnates. These feudal lords seized judicial power over the people living on their lands. Moreover, they often enjoyed immunity from prosecution by royal officials. magnates expanded their influence, seized the land of peasants or impoverished warriors, and used their positions and the force of their weapons. Thus, the local population became entirely dependent on the will of the feudal lords. Often, medieval feudal law favored the triumph of the strongest rather than justice. The laws of the Kingdom of Aragon even allowed local feudal lords to seize land by force. Some historians interpret this paragraph as a blessing for wars against Muslims, while others see it as a direct legal permit for feudal extortion. At the same time, a system of vassal relations was being established. The formal subordinate was a vassal who pledged to faithfully serve his suzerain or lord, that is, his master. Additionally, the vassal had to support his suzerain in his military campaigns and assist in times of need. In return, the lord offered his protection and granted the vassal a fief or benefice or money. In the 9th century, the grandson of Charlemagne, Charles the Bald, decreed that every free man should have a lord, which contributed to the strengthening of the feudal system. Within the feudal lords, their own hierarchy was formed. Nominally, the highest was the emperor or king, followed by princes and dukes, with barons slightly lower on the feudal ladder. The ordinary knights were vassals of the latter. Somewhat different forms of vassal dependence could apply to peasants or townspeople, who were dependent on the aristocratic lord. However, during the era of feudal fragmentation, magnates often rebelled against their lords. For example, in the 12th century, the French magnate Thomas of Marle seized several royal fortresses, appropriated the property of the Bishop of Reims, and dared to challenge King Louis the Fat himself. The lawlessness and plundering of Thomas prompted the local nobility to support the French king, who finally defeated the defiant rebel several years later. The formalization of vassal relations was mainly accompanied by the vassal presenting homage to his suzerain, payment for his fief, and swearing allegiance. Homage could be either purely symbolic, or reach a staggering £1,000 for baronial estates in England during the reign of John Lackland. The system of power relations in the High Middle Ages was primarily based on personal connections. Therefore, situations often arose where, due to marriages and deaths, large estates or counties passed to other feudal families and states. For example, this happened in the 12th century with Aquitaine, which was nominally subordinate to the French king, but, due to the successful marriage of Henry Plantagenet, passed into the possession of English kings. English kings as rulers of their state were equal to French ones, but as rulers of Aquitaine, Guienne, and Normandy, they acted as formal vassals as they nominally held French fiefs. The main vocation of knights was war. From childhood, they were trained for battles and campaigns, taught horseback riding, fencing, and the use of various weapons. The knight's most faithful companion was his warhorse, the destrier. This animal had to be large and strong enough to swiftly carry the armored rider. The knight's main weapon was a long cavalry lance, up to 4 meters long. For close combat or infantry battle, long 1.5-handed swords were most actively used, less frequently axes, sabers, or warhammers. Contrary to common stereotypes, knightly swords were mostly only 30-40% heavier than sabers. For the knight's protection, a shield and armor were responsible. Initially, the role of armor was played by mail armor and an open helmet, mainly of the Norman type. Later, from the 13th century, heavier brigandines, resembling cuirasses, more closed helmets, were used. And by the end of the 14th century, wealthy knights wore luxurious plate armor. Knights were assisted by their squires or pages, who also fought on horseback, but mostly had lighter and cheaper equipment. Almost every knight had one or several squires. The attack of heavy feudal cavalry was a brilliant spectacle, and the knightly army could crush much more numerous armies due to powerful pressure, bravery, and personal skill. This is exactly what happened in the Battle of Ramlah, 1101, where a 1,000-strong crusader army defeated the tenfold superior forces of the Fatimid Caliphate. In civilian life, wealthy knights dressed luxuriously, and sometimes the cost of a feudal lord's clothing and jewelry could be as much as an entire village. In the Middle Ages, there were strict hierarchical rules that prohibited representatives of the Third Estate from carrying swords or wearing clothing as colorful as aristocrats. In particular, in Germany in the 13th century, the length of upturned noses on boots was strictly regulated. Feudal wars were especially fierce. Even a stolen oak bucket could be a pretext for military action. It was this artifact that sparked another round of merciless struggle between the Guelphs of Bologna and the Ghibellines of Modena, in which the Modenese emerged victorious. Often, even the closest relatives started bloody conflicts among themselves for the right to own certain lands or castles. For example, ancient Rus was shaken by wars between the descendants of Sviatoslav, from which Volodymyr emerged victorious, and the subsequent wars of Volodymyr's sons. Often, political ambitions prompted sons and wives to rebel against their parents and husbands. For instance, the sons of the English King Henry II, Henry the Young King, and Richard the Lionheart began a struggle against him. They were supported by their mother, Queen Eleanor of Aquitaine, who was still Henry II's wife. The rebellion was subdued at an extraordinary cost, and Eleanor was imprisoned. One of the proclaimed duties of European knights was the defense of Christians and the Christian Church. To stop feudal wars and redirect the fervent knightly energy against the enemies of the Holy See, the papacy organized crusades. According to the plan, the most ambitious or landless knights were supposed to participate in these campaigns to reconquer the Holy Land, Palestine. For those knights who were not eager to fight Muslims in Western Asia, the Holy See offered crusades against the so-called heretics of Eastern Europe, or the Muslim states of the Iberian Peninsula. As a result, spiritual chivalric orders began to emerge and actively develop in the 12th and 13th centuries. The most powerful of them were the Hospitallers, Templars, and Teutonic Knights. After joining the order, a knight fully devoted himself to serving God, praying, defending pilgrims, and warring against the unbelievers. Knights actively developed their military skills during training, hunting, or tournaments. Knightly tournaments appeared in France, most likely in the 11th century. The most classic rules of the 13th century involved a mounted duel of two knights with lances in specially constructed arenas. If several attempts to determine the winner failed, the opponents switched to swords, and then to other cold weapons. Only aristocrats who could prove their noble descent were allowed to participate in the competitions. Compliance with these rules was monitored by the Heraldic Commission. The tournament had a cup format and was accompanied by sumptuous banquets and other entertainments. The winners received prizes from the organizers, and mostly the horse and armor of the defeated participants. The latter mostly redeemed their property, so the victors of knightly tournaments could earn quite well. The poor knight William Marshall won dozens of brilliant victories at tournaments, which earned him immortal fame, wealth, and later he received the title of Earl and the position of Regent of England. The poverty of young William was emphasized by the fact that he had to borrow a horse for his first tournament for the collateral of his clothing and equipment. However, until the 14th century, the church sought to prohibit tournaments, as it considered them sinful. According to churchmen, these competitions aroused pride and led to the death or mutilation of participants. The death of King Henry II of France in a tournament duel with the English Earl of Montgomery served as a reason to ban tournaments in 1559. Often, the love and relationships of knights and aristocrats of that time are imagined as distinctly romantic. However, most marital unions at that time were arranged by the parents of the children based on purely mercantile calculations, without considering the feelings of their descendants. After all, a medieval marriage, whether of a knight, an influential magnate, or a peasant, was primarily aimed at increasing or preserving his property. Therefore, marriages like those of daughters of wealthy feudal lords with poor knights were very rare. Marriages between people from different estates, such as aristocrats and peasants, were practically tabooed at the legislative level. A typical example of a marriage of convenience was presented by Francis of Angoulême, who married the daughter of the French king Claude Valois. Francis regularly cheated on his wife with various mistresses, repeatedly boasted of his frivolous escapades to his family, and their marriage was only a way to obtain the French crown. It should be noted that stricter moral requirements and punishment for adultery were applied to aristocratic women. Thus, one of the wives of Henry VIII, Anne Boleyn, was executed on charges of adultery. Moreover, knights often used their privileged status for seduction or sexual abuse of women from lower strata of society. One of the main duties of knights was to continue their lineage. The absence of children or infertility of one of the members of the marriage caused social condemnation and could even become a reason for divorce. Feudal lords most actively fathered offspring, often engaging in extramarital affairs with their servants or dependent peasant women. According to Mark Bloch, medieval castles were teeming with bastards born to feudal lords. These children were called bastards and formally deprived of the rights to the lands and titles of their noble fathers. However, sometimes feudal lords saw potential in such bastards and helped them come to power. Some of the most successful bastards were Charles Martel, who defeated the Arabs in the Battle of Poitiers, and William the Conqueror, who seized England and became one of the most powerful rulers of his time. A symbol of the power and wealth of a medieval feudal lord was his residence. Barons and other influential magnates mostly built stone or wooden castles where they lived with their retinue and garrison. The moderately wealthy knighthood could count on a small fortress with a single tower, while minor knights mostly lived either in the castles of their lords or in houses in their own villages. However, even an impoverished knight sought to emphasize the distinction of his home from a peasant's. Decoration, applying his coat of arms to the facade of the house, etc., were used for this purpose. In feudal castles, besides residential and farm buildings, there could be an artisan or trade workshops and a marketplace. A common attribute of aristocratic fortresses was dungeons used as warehouses, prisons, and places for torturing rebellious peasants or criminals. Medieval aristocracy lived lavishly, and one of the virtues of a knight was considered to be unbridled generosity. Most knights were fantastic spendthrifts who lived off the exploitation of their subjects' labor and plunder during war. If there were not enough funds for a luxurious life, feudal lords could increase the serfdom obligations for peasants, introduce new taxes, or extort money from Jews or merchants. Some knights did not stop at this and became outright bandits. At the turn of the 15th and 16th centuries, a gang of feudal lord Black Christoph operated in Silesia. Christoph turned his ancestral castle into a robber's den, and, together with his henchmen, robbed all travelers and people around the fortress. He often resorted to torture and violence to lift his spirits. From time to time, he demanded money from the inhabitants of small towns. But once outraged burghers slaughtered Christoph's henchmen, he himself was hanged in Legnica. However, not all feudal lords were such immoral lovers of power, entertainment, and violence against the weak. French knight and writer of the 14th century, a participant in the Hundred Years' War, Geoffroy de Charny, wrote, "Chivalry is the path to salvation, for whoever takes up the sword for a great cause, fighting in the name of the Lord, whether fighting against infidels, defending the weak, or defending one's good name, first and foremost saves his own soul." The author of these words was an exemplary knight and died in the Battle of Poitiers, defending his king. Soon, the king himself, John the Good, remained true to his word and returned to English captivity, as he promised to bring a fantastic ransom for himself or remain the lifelong captive of his English counterpart. However, by the end of the Middle Ages, knightly armies began to give way to cheaper and more efficient professional infantry. Knightly cavalry suffered painful and resounding defeats in battles against Scottish and Flemish pikemen, English infantry, and Czech Hussites. And at the dawn of the new era, the widespread introduction of firearms made knightly armor easily penetrable, and the knights themselves vulnerable to the formations of professional infantry armed with pikes and muskets. The era of knightly armies passed. But the knights themselves retained privileges and continued to dominate over the Third Estate. This was enough to leave a memory of themselves, as chivalry still captures the imagination of artists, writers, and directors who recreate images of noble warriors defending the innocent and fighting against evil in their works.